Thanks for joining us. This is Harlem, and this is the Fresh Ubuntu Podcast, and welcome back. And it's the week after Thanksgiving, and I hope you all had a great Thanksgiving. Now we're all gearing up for the shopping season. Shopping has its own season now. And let's see here. This week, we are going to do something different. We're going to go outside the realm of open source and talk about OS X Leopard. And specifically, there was a blog posting that we will reveal to you in the podcast. And so, also with us is a special guest, the former host of the MacNew podcast, which is now no longer up and running anymore. But as you may or may not recall, Peter, the co-host right now, was also the co-host of the MacNew podcast. So anyway, he's being reunited, so to speak, with his old host, Scott Wilsey. So anyway, I'll just let you listen to the rest of the podcast after this short break. Bye-bye. Welcome to the show. This is Harlem, and I'm here with Peter Nicolaitis. And this week, we have a very special guest. Peter used to co-host a podcast with this gentleman. And anyway, he's going to be a special guest this week, and we are going to have a very interesting topic, something that we don't normally touch on. But this week, we have somewhat of an expert about this. And so we are going to be talking today with Scott, the former host of the MacNew podcast, among other podcasts. So Scott, welcome to the show. And Peter, you know Scott a little bit better than I do, so why don't you go ahead and, if you've got any dirt on him, we can just talk about it right now, get it out in the open, and that way we've pretty much got him under our thumbs. What do you say?
Yeah, well, let's see, I'm trying to describe how to describe Scott. He's very witty, comes across as being very smart, and I think the most defining point about him during our podcasting career was his pretty much constant rants against his employer, whom we affectionately refer to as Monolith 2000. And so I'm really hoping that we can hear some references to that today, too. But anyway, all-around good guy, good friend of mine, Scott Wilsey, and I'm glad to have you here today with us.
Well, thank you. I was trying to find a way to hack into your computer from here in case you were going to say something bad about me, but I failed.
That's okay. I'm running Ubuntu. You couldn't hack it if you wanted to.
Scott is a Mac user, and he's just installed Ubuntu on one of his machines, and now I believe is dual booting OS X and Ubuntu at the same time. So we're going to do a side-by-side comparison between Ubuntu and OS X and see what the differences are and what some of the things that they do the same. So Peter, why don't you go ahead and take it away, and we'll just kind of just jump in as we feel like it.
For similarities, I mean, Fresh Ubuntu generally is a podcast geared towards folks who are moving towards Ubuntu, usually coming from Windows. I guess we should talk about some of the similarities first. I think you know, Scott, we probably both agree that Ubuntu is generally accepted among experts as being more secure out of the box, and OS X both just have a better track record with security than Windows. Do you agree with that?
I would absolutely agree with that. And just for the record, because I want to make sure there's no OS wars going on here, anything that's not Windows is going to be pretty okay in my book.
That shouldn't okay. Inflame anybody. That'll be all right.
No, I think that's perfectly fine. Sorry. So what started this conversation is a few weeks ago, I posted a link to someone's blog post, which said basically, they called it Switching from OS X to Ubuntu, 10 Things I Miss. And what we wanted to do is, since I had run Tiger, but I'm really only running Tiger on my home machine as my media center, so I use it for some iTunes and playing DVDs and stuff. I haven't used it as a primary or even a secondary operating system really for a long time now. So we wanted to dig in and get, you know, Scott's opinion on this because he is a day in and day out OS X user. So why don't we talk about that article a bit, Scott? I know we want to, I want to talk a little bit about the things that the person says in his review. And then you also, we Twittered back and forth. We had a miniature Twitter war going on against, back and forth, about some of the things in general about the Linux community and other stuff that you brought up in your voicemail to us last week also. The first thing that, the person on the Starry Hope blog said that he missed is the dashboard, you know, which is all of the widgets and things. Scott, what do you think about that? Or do you find the widgets are like a super-duper productivity tool or an essential part of the OS? Would you miss them totally if you didn't have them?
You know, I have to be honest. I think widgets and dashboard are one of those things that you either love or you never use. And I personally fall on the never-use side. For one thing, they do take up memory, so... Now, they will unload until you go back into dashboard and look at them again after a period of time, but they do take up memory. I just don't use them. So I personally would not miss them that much. Right now, the only two widgets I have loaded are a local weather one and a Mount Hood Meadows snow watch one because the snowboarding season is going to be coming up here pretty soon.
Yeah, personally, for a while, I was using Yahoo widgets or the Confabulator desktop on Windows. And I used that for a while, but I ended up not using it so much. Towards the end, I dropped them. I do have some gadgets installed in my Google desktop, but overall, I generally don't get that much out of those widgets, so, you know, I generally drop them. Harlem, anything to contribute on that?
Yeah, I haven't used anything on a Mac operating system yet. But I do like the widgets that Yahoo offers. Formerly Confabulator, but now Yahoo widgets, and I do use them often. I have about two or three widgets open at once, and that's about it. Other than the three that I use, I don't use anything else. But I do like the aspect of not having to, say, open up your browser window and check what the weather is. All you have to do is, you know, have your Yahoo weather widget up and running. So I kind of do like that aspect of it. And, you know, I'm one of those guys. And my family, too, we're information hounds, I guess. We want to know what the weather is and what's currently happening with news and things like that. So.
Yeah, I guess I have to say I'd agree with you on that. I love having all that info at my fingertips. I just had some bad experiences with the Yahoo side of things where the things, you know, the widgets themselves or the system itself, the Confabulator, the Yahoo widget system, started to become a real resource hog. So I just ended up turning it off because, you know, my whole system would freeze on occasion and it almost always came down to the Yahoo widgets. That's obviously not a problem on OS X, or not a problem with OS X, unless the you know, your F12 key, the little dashboard, is having those same problems. I did use them a little bit under Tiger. I never had a problem with the widgets, but I never really used them extensively. So I do think, you know, that there's a place for it. Sometimes it's nice to have little widgets somewhere, but I'm not really totally sold on being a deal breaker there. Now, question, Scott, do you use Quicksilver on OS X?
No, I don't use Quicksilver.
Okay.
Quicksilver is basically an application launcher, and it's a whole lot more. You can do some scripting in it. You can manipulate documents, move things around really quickly with just a few keystrokes. But it's basically described as an application launcher. I was using LaunchBar. It's a little more simple. Basically, what you can do is, for example, if you want to launch TextMate, like your editor, you could hit control spacebar, type TM, hit return, and it would be launched, you know, before you could even see what you did. It was launching it really fast. So you didn't have to go digging around in the Finder or look on something on the dock. And I used that under Tiger. And the reason I did was because under Tiger, Spotlight was slow, and it was very inconvenient for using to launch applications. You would hit command spacebar to bring up the little Spotlight text box. You would start typing your search term in there, and then it would slowly start grinding and pulling stuff up. And if it found an application, instead of highlighting that, you'd hit command, it would highlight the application, and then you would hit enter. Under Leopard, Spotlight is actually very fast, and it's also a much better application launcher to where if it finds a match for the search term that you put in, it'll bring up that application as the top one already highlighted. So then all you have to do is hit return, and you have your application. Yeah, I was just going to say, I did try Quicksilver a few times. For people who are used to it or are used to application launchers, living without them would be extremely difficult, yes.
How does that differ, though, than, say, from having shortcuts to your most frequently used icons or frequently used apps, like on the dock or in GNOME on the GNOME panel somewhere or even on your desktop?
It doesn't, except that you can use your keyboard without using your mouse, and it also simplifies, like, if you could see my dock right now, it's got a lot of icons on it. You know, I just don't want any more, but there's still other applications that I use frequently. So for me, I find that being able to launch stuff that way is just more convenient. And especially when I'm using the laptop away from the desktop and I'm just using the touchpad, then I like to do that. I like to be able to launch stuff with the keyboard. So.
I guess that makes sense. I'm a keyboard kind of guy, obviously, the whole terminal man page minute thing. So I guess I have to respect that. I know with Ubuntu, GNOME desktop out of the box, you can do Alt F2 to run a command, and it will autofill in things that are in the path, but that's nowhere near what I would consider an application launcher. So I do know that we recently reported, though, that the source code for Quicksilver is being open sourced as a Google project, so I would expect that we're going to be seeing, Linux versions pretty quickly.
And I think that you'll find that it's going to be a really popular tool for people that try it out in Linux.
Harlem, any thoughts on that?
Actually, not all that familiar with Quicksilver, although I'm looking at the wiki for it, and it reads here, Quicksilver uses a priority system based on previous usage to determine which item to list first of those which match apparently learning from the user's action. And I can see some benefit to that kind of thing. I don't know how much of a resource hog Quicksilver would be, but, again, I'm sort of a want-to-save-my-resources type of person. I don't see where the difference would be between having a shortcut on your desktop or, on your one of your panels versus using Quicksilver, other than that it learns what you like and what you don't like.
And just remember that it also can do things like, type in a search for something, and when you find a match, then you can use certain keystrokes to perform actions on even files or folders. Quicksilver is pretty powerful. It's more than just launching an application. You can manipulate things around in a lot of different ways. You can send stuff places. You can, move files around and stuff like that really quickly with just a few keystrokes.
It's a little more than just an application launcher. Is that what you're saying? And what would be
people?
I guess what would be the analogy for a Linux application for this?
I don't really think there is one yet. I mean, there are other launch bar type things, and I've heard about the Avant Window Manager and other dock replacements. We covered another, GNOME panel edition a month or so ago, too. There are all kinds of things that can give some of this functionality. That actually gets into a bit of a rant, I think, on some of the replacements for this. And I don't know if we want to go into that right now or we want to wait till later. But I know one of the things that Scott was talking about was in this blog post that we were looking at, or not this one, but someone said, if you miss Quicksilver, then you should learn Bash scripting and never look back. Right, Scott?
Yeah, and I guess my response to that is Quicksilver is kind of a GUI interface GUI replacement for clicking on an icon and launching it, or some of the stuff that you would do in scripting. So I guess to answer you, Harlem, it's a replacement, or the analogous thing would be shell scripts. I guess what I felt with that response, Peter, was that you shouldn't always have to reinvent the wheel. Now, I do think that if you're using Linux or any Unix-based operating system, it's a great idea to learn how to do scripting and to do stuff like that. But if you just want to get something done, that's not the answer that you want necessarily at the time. Sometimes you just want to use your computer. So.
Now, we talked about that, actually, and when we played your voicemail, which is going to come out on the podcast before this one. And I feel the same way. You should not have to always, reinvent the wheel, so to speak. And I think if Quicksilver brings a lot of cool added functionality, then I'm hoping someone will very quickly make a port of that to GNOME and KDE and all the other Linux desktop environments so we can have something like that available. I guess so the consensus is that, Quicksilver does sound like a valuable app, even though none of us use it extensively, if at all. And that while you probably could do the things that, Quicksilver does, that functionality is not natively available. But I do want to point out that that functionality is also not natively available on OS X. This just happens to be, you know, what could be considered a killer app that someone happened to write first for OS X, and, you know, is only now being made available, or now the code is being made available so that it can be ported to other operating systems.
I do agree that if your hands are used to getting on the keyboard and launching apps that way, it's really hard to give that up, I found, personally.
Okay. Now, next on the list was this gentleman misses the Adium, or Adium. I say Adium. I hear other people say Adium. The Adium chat client. And he describes it as simply the best chat client that he's ever used. I used it a little bit on OS X. I thought it was okay. I generally went back to iChat, except then I couldn't chat with my Yahoo Messenger folks and other chat networks. Right now, I use Pigeon pretty much across the board, except on OS X, because I can't find a native Pigeon implementation there. So I do have Adium installed on my Mac, but I never really use it. I'm using Pigeon on all my Linux boxes and my Windows machines, and I'm liking it. It's pretty much my default IM client. The only one that I use other than that is on my Nokia, my Symbian cell phone. What do you guys use for chat clients, I mean, besides Skype?
I pretty much don't use anything besides Skype anymore, honestly. I do have iChat, though. I'll probably start using that more just because in Leopard with iChat, you can do nice things like take over your dad's computer and show him visually why everything he's been doing is destructive and horrible. He should never do it again. So you have the desktop sharing stuff built into iChat now, which is really cool, and I plan to make a lot of use to help him out.
But wait a minute. Hold, I have to interrupt for a second. Isn't your father on a Mac?
He is on a Mac.
How can he be just doing destructive things that are bad for his computer?
Well, he can destroy his own files, or he can, you know what I mean? He can mess his own stuff up.
Oh, okay.
A lot less problem than when he had Windows, but you can still mess your stuff up with OS X.
Okay, so you're not talking about, like, you know, downloading things and installing stuff and getting riddled with spyware and, you know, from visiting all of those naughty sites and stuff like that. You're talking about just dragging your system folder to the trash or stuff like that?
Things like that, yeah. Or what happened? How did I just delete this mailbox or something like that? Or show him, you know, there's a lot of this stuff that's in OS X that takes time to get used to, especially if you're switching from Windows. You know, now I can show him things instead of, you know, waiting for him to finally get me a description that I can understand what he's trying to do, and then me coming up with a description back that he can figure out, okay, here's how it works, and now I can just show him visually. But so for that, I might use iChat. But honestly, otherwise, you know, I do Skype IMing sometimes, and that's about it, personally. I've tried to get away from all that.
Well, you're not doing a lot of, like, project collaboration and stuff like that. I mean, I use Pigeon, and a lot of my clients I have on AOL Instant Messenger, and I have other friends on Yahoo. We generally use AIM for, you know, coordinating with my contractors. We're also setting up an internal Jabber server, so we have our own, you know, secure channels. But, you know, I use instant messaging a lot, you know, throughout the day. And I generally, I don't know, maybe I'm missing something, but I've never really found that one chat client is vastly superior to another. The biggest thing that I require is being able to log onto several IM networks at a time. And these days, most of those do that. I guess what AOL does, iChat does AOL and what, .Mac networks now? Does it do any of the other networks?
I think it just does those, so you can tell it to log into Jabber accounts.
Right.
But, you know, straight out of the box, the way that it's configured, the way they intend you to use it is AIM or .Mac, but then you can set up a Jabber account as well.
But again, that's not really a thing about the operating system. I mean, you can get, you know, fine chat clients for every operating system. I think that Pigeon is just fine. You know, it seems very stable. It connects to all the networks. It works great for me. Harlan, what do you use?
I really have just recently started using Pigeon, but in general, I don't use any chat client other than what comes with Skype. And you brought a good point. It's really more of a collaboration tool for you. And for people like me, it's not really much of a tool other than it's another way to get a hold of somebody. You know what I mean? And so I'm just trying to kind of cut out as many ways that you can get a hold of me as possible, because it just seems like you're on a leash most of the time. I don't use any chat client, although I have recently started using Game. Excuse me, not Game, but Pigeon. And that brings me to another point, is that there are other things that are more web-centric. You know, I use Twitter. I use Pounce.
I also have a Haiku account, which is sort of like the same thing, I guess you could call it. It still uses SMS. At the end of the day, you can just turn it off your browser and it stops, you know, and so.
I thought that was kind of interesting when I heard about some people who, you know, do use Twitter and Jaiku and those other services as, you know, messaging clients. I, you know, didn't occur to me when I first heard about them. But my wife and I do that every now and then, you know, and Scott and I, we've been sending private messages back and forth via Twitter. So I guess I have to think of that. But that's not what I consider an instant messaging. I mean, that's the whole point of an instant messaging service is that, you know, when the person is on, you're sending the message and you generally know within a few seconds whether or not the message has been received. Right. Whereas Twitter is, it's more like email light to me, or it's more like webmail light. You know, you can just send a brief message back and forth and you can direct it to someone or you can just post it to the public. I use those, you know, I do that a little bit too. But, you know, if I need to, like, collaborate with somebody on a project, I'm not going to be Twittering them back and forth because that's, you know, that's kind of like emailing back and forth, only you've got, you know, that 140-character restriction. But, again, I guess that's, I don't know, he likes the ADM chat client. I don't really see that so much. So, number four, I think that we're all going to agree on this one. Number four on the Starry Hope blog that he misses on Ubuntu is professional graphics software. And he's talking about, you know, as everybody knows, Adobe. And where, you know, when are we going to have Photoshop for Linux? I think, and guys, you know, I'm expecting you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but I think we would all like to see more professional software for Linux, available for Linux. And while I know there are open source alternatives, it's not necessarily the same. Sometimes, you know, you may have a killer app or whatnot that runs only on Windows or maybe even only on Mac, like Quicksilver. And I think it would be better for everybody. We would hope that, you know, it would be better if we could see these on Linux and other platforms. What do you guys think?
I don't know about Harlan, but I definitely agree. For me, one of the happiest days that I can remember was when Adobe came out with a universal version of Fireworks, because I do use Fireworks also. And there's really no substitute if you do anything with graphics at all for these professional graphics applications. Yeah, I definitely could see this being a huge issue for some people.
I mean, personally, I'm not going to go out and spend, what, $1,200 or however much, you know, the Creative Suite or something goes. I mean, for me, GIMP does everything I need it to do, but I am not, by any stretch, a professional graphic artist or editor or anything like that, so I think for, you know, a number of applications, GIMP is great, and there are other alternatives, too, out there. But I think that, yes, you know, seeing Photoshop for Linux would be, I think that would knock down a lot of doors. What do you think, Harlan?
Yeah, I absolutely 100% agree with you, and my point is, I don't necessarily have to use Photoshop, but I would like it as a choice, you know, and someday, maybe, when I get to that point, if I get to that point, I'd like to be able to choose between GIMP or Photoshop. Right now I'm using GIMP, and that's pretty much all I need, and I don't foresee myself in the future having to go to that powerful of an application to use, but I would still like to be given that choice. Now, and Photoshop isn't the only thing either. You and I, especially me, I use Quicken, and I would like to have Quicken as one of my things. That's right, this is about graphics software.
We can diverge. It's our podcast. But, yeah. Do whatever you like.
Okay, let me start. But let me just say this. You know, there is I wholeheartedly agree that there's a market for, you know, whether it be Photoshop, whether it be graphics, whether it be sound software or video software or financial software, there is a market for that in Linux and within Linux communities, and there's so much you can do with Wine development and getting other programs to work with Wine. But, you know, I think the time is now, I've said this before in the Roundtable podcast, I think the time is now for those software companies, third-party vendors, to offer Linux clients. And believe me, just as the BBC has kind of underestimated how many Linux users there are, I really think that people like Adobe, Microsoft, Apple have underestimated how many people really would like to have a Linux version of whatever software that they make?
I guess back in the day, when I first started using Macs about a little over 10 years ago, BBEdit was the Mac editor. I mean, if you did any sort of development work, you know, coding work or text editing, BBEdit was what you used. And I guess these days, TextMate is getting very popular. I don't know if it's more popular, but I see, you know, in the folks I know who are using Macs for web development, programming and stuff, they're all using TextMate. And I know that the Ruby on Rails crew and the guys over at 37 Signals are all big TextMate guys. The guy here at the Starry Hope blog says that, well, you know, he uses GVim, the VI editor, the GNOME VI improved editor, and Nautilus, you know, Nautilus file manager, file browser instead, or, you know, instead of TextMate. And I was kind of curious as to, maybe he doesn't know about it, but he should maybe look at the Kate editor. Kate comes, I think it's the default text editor for Kubuntu in the KDE environment, but you can install it on GNOME. And I've used it. Lately, I haven't used it because I've been trying to get better about using VI. VI is what I always use at terminal, but, you know, so I'm trying to kind of standardize, and I have, GVim for Windows, and I'm trying to get, you know, to use that more under GNOME, under Ubuntu also. But, Kate feels a little more modern, a little more, polished, and it seems to me to have all the same features that TextMate has. Scott, I know you were doing some Ruby on Rails work a while ago, and I know you do, some .NET development stuff. What do you use for editors and stuff, like, when you're on your Mac?
On the Mac, I do use TextMate, and, BBEdit is still an extremely popular editor on the Mac. There's still a lot of people that swear by it and, don't use anything else, but I do use TextMate. Now, I'm not really familiar with GVim, but I do have to say, well, I use VI and Vim a lot at work, and, so I'm familiar with how they work. I'm not an expert. I don't know all the shortcuts and so forth, but I'm comfortable in it. So I don't think I would have as much problem with it maybe as he did, but I really like TextMate a lot. It's got a lot of plugins for different languages. Seems like almost no matter what type of programming or scripting you're doing, you'll find a plugin that allows it to understand the syntax of that language. I find it to be a really comfortable, convenient editor. My main priority in an editor is don't annoy me, and when I'm in the programming zone, just let me do what I'm doing easily and comfortably without getting in my way. And I think TextMate really meets that criteria for me.
GVim, you know, it's basically, it feels like a terminal app, a text-based app that's been, you know, ported over to a GUI. The analogy I would say is, like, you know, it's a DOS version that they just brought over and, you know, slapped a file menu on and made it a Windows version. That was the old analogy we went through when people are going through, DOS to Windows conversions. But it really feels like that to me. It's basically you've got all the conveniences, all the shortcuts, all the keyboard functionality and the editing mode and the command mode of Vim or VI. Plus you can do, mouse stuff. You've got copy and paste and you've got graphical menus and stuff. But it just never feels quite as integrated or, quite as polished as Kate does for me, for instance. Harlem, you don't really do any, like, programming or anything, but, and I know you use gedit and stuff when you generally have to, like, edit text files and stuff, but do you use any other editors for any more advanced functioning or anything like that?
You guys are really approaching it from a programming perspective, and that's, really way out of my realm, although I do a little bit of web development, and gedit is just pretty much plain and simple, and it's my editor of choice, I guess, by default, because that's what comes with Ubuntu. Although I do also use, as another web editor, text editor, I use Aptana, which is a internet development environment, but also has its text editing qualities to it, too. So I wouldn't be able to give you a good analysis of either one of those. It's not from a programming perspective, I guess. I see a text editor as just that. It edits text and nothing else. As far as functionality is concerned, if I can type it on a keyboard and I can see it on the screen, that's good enough for me. So that's as far as I go about analyzing any text editor. So Sorry.
So your feature requirements are very low, is that what you're saying?
Pretty much. I'm pretty easy to please when it comes to that.
Must accept keyboard input.
Right, exactly. That's it.
Okay, moving on. This guy, sorry, Hope, he likes the OS X built-in dictionary application. Basically, he says that he finds himself using it all the time, doing, you know, synonyms and stuff. Personally, when I need to look up definitions or things, I've been using Google. And that's the thing where I either use the Google desktop, or I suppose if I had a widget, I could use a widget. He says that Ubuntu does have a dictionary, but it can only look up words in free dictionaries, and the results and the quality can vary. I've been pretty happy with the results I get when I use Google as my dictionary. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I do find myself using the built-in dictionary in OS X a lot. There's also another feature that I really like that I just found out about recently. I can never remember I have to go into the system preferences and look up the keyboard command from time to time to remind myself. But when I do remember, you can actually, if you're an application that supports it, you can, for example, in Safari, I can highlight a word and then do this command keystroke, and it'll actually bring up a little drop-down with the definition of it for me. And then if I want to, I can also select the thesaurus. So there's built-in inline tools, and then, of course, I do use the dictionary from time to time.
Yeah, I think that's definitely something OS X really shines at, the integration that is available across applications, especially the ones that are bundled. I mean, that's something you're talking about. When I first used a GUI on Unix, it was an X-windowing system, there was no clipboard. You know, you couldn't even copy text out of a terminal into your editor or vice versa. Things have come a long way from since then, but, you know, you don't have that same kind of thing where the integration, you know, like moving from one application to another. And I don't think, for instance, you can use OpenOffice to look up, you could probably customize your dictionaries and stuff, but I don't think there's that kind of functionality or something. Or I think that definitely OS X's shining point there in this case would be like the integration, not necessarily the dictionary app itself, but its ability for other apps to share data and stuff. And for your easy access of the dictionary is one example of that. You can really quickly get access to things like that from other applications.
And that's not a failing of Linux by any means. What it is that when you have one vendor that makes the operating system and they also bundle a lot of applications in it, they can provide that kind of thing.
I guess, you could see the same thing. You could theoretically see the same sort of functionality if there's an open specification and everybody wanted to, program against that, so that OpenOffice and Firefox and Opera or whatnot, all these different apps could tap into the same set of stuff. One thing, I guess, I do tend to think that sometimes the open source community as a whole is somewhat splintered. And while I do think that we benefit greatly from the diversity, there are times, I think, when a little more focus would be a good thing. And I think this is an example.
You know, in theory, you'd think that with Windows and with the Microsoft products, there is integration there. As you know, a lot of the stuff relies on that operating system and it has certain capabilities because of it, but they just don't seem to understand that type of integration that's actually useful and that customers find to be really cool. Instead, they want to embed the browser into the operating system so that the whole thing is a big security hole. That's the type of integration that they go for.
I was going to say, that's an integration? Come on.
Yeah.
First, we'll embed it into the email client. Then we'll embed the whole thing right into the operating system. And then we'll make a web scripting thing so that we can put DLLs on websites and they can hook right into your OS. Brilliant! Okay, moving on. Number 7 is that what this guy misses is QuickTime. He says his QuickTime is just one of those things that Mac users take for granted. It's just there. It plays almost any media file that you can throw at it. Playing media files on Ubuntu is not a great experience. I think I'll say a few things about that. First off, playing media on Ubuntu has gotten a lot better with the last couple of releases. Personally, I do not miss QuickTime. I don't use QuickTime itself all that much. I mean, every now and then when I get into movie time fever, I'll go to QuickTime or apple.com/trailers or whatnot and download some trailers. I don't find myself using QuickTime all that much, even on Windows, except for the fact that it's, like a built-in component of iTunes. But, overall, I would say that, the state of media on Linux and Ubuntu, it's still got, a ways to go, but it's getting better. But QuickTime, not something I really miss. Scott, what do you think? If are you going to miss QuickTime if you move over to your Ubuntu box or what?
Well, I probably would, and here's why. Because he's right that it's built in, it plays just about everything, it handles about all of your media without really launching QuickTime yourself. It's just being used by the other applications or whatever, whether it's as a plugin or they're just using the QuickTime. QuickTime is more than just a player. It's also the API and the protocols that you can use to play media. I hate QuickTime on Windows. When I was a Windows guy, before I switched over, I hated QuickTime. It's gotten better, but it still is not anything like QuickTime is on the Mac because, you know, QuickTime is one of those things that kind of is integrated into the operating system. From a Mac owner's perspective, I would miss it. Now, to do things like play Windows Media and stuff like that, you still have to find plugins. So I don't really see how that's different than the Ubuntu experience, except that maybe you don't have to find as many. I don't know. I'd say, okay, I see where he's at, but I think this is more of a comfort issue.
I'm with Scott on this one. It's really poorly implemented under Windows, and it's a really insidious application too, because you'll download it and it'll show up in your taskbar, and it's hard to get rid of. And
on the Windows side, I'm totally with you there. The thing is just it's a beast.
Right.
And
now on Ubuntu, I can pretty much, without complaint, or maybe a few keystrokes away, I can pretty much view anything I want. So I haven't used it on a Mac, so I couldn't tell you whether I liked it or not. I'm pretty sure I don't like it on a Windows machine, and so that's my take.
Okay, next on the list, Bluetooth support and syncing. He basically says Bluetooth support in OS X is simple and easy to use, and he gives an example of syncing with his mobile phones and stuff. I did some limited Bluetooth work, but since I never really used a Mac as my primary operating system, all of my contacts, my calendar, my phone numbers, etc., were always in my Microsoft Exchange server. That's a separate rant. I never understand why Apple went through great lengths to make it so you could synchronize your contacts against Exchange, but not your calendars. But anyway, right now I don't use Bluetooth for anything because my cell phone has Wi-Fi in it, and it synchronizes directly to my Exchange server. Bluetooth support under Linux, I know it's got a ways to go. I think it may even has farther to go than audio. I don't know. From what I hear, that seems to be the case. Scott, what do you think? Do you use your Bluetooth stuff a lot?
Yeah, this is one area where I don't have a lot to contribute because I'm like you. I really don't. The only experience I've really had with it is setting up a phone for Anna where she wanted to use the Bluetooth on it, and it was really easy to do. It worked out really great with OS X. It's pretty easy. Yeah, I don't really have any experience with it other than to say, obviously, if you have an iPhone and OS X, you're set. And it seems like most of the other phones, the standard cell phones that have syncing capability in, it seems like, yeah, you go through a little learning process, but it's not that hard to get things actually working. So I'd say that this probably works as well. It probably is as easy in OS X as it is under Windows, if not easier. And as far as the Linux side of it goes, while I've had various different Linux installs over the years, I've never even considered doing anything like this with them just because they were never my primary operating system.
When I did some Bluetooth stuff, I do remember when I had Motorola phones, I did use them to sync against my Macs just for, you know, like a one-time thing. Since I did have my contacts from my Exchange server, I was able to transfer all of them over and then just do a one-time sync so that, you know, at least I got my entire contacts list, you know, from then into my phone, so I didn't have to enter, you know, literally over 1,000 names and addresses and stuff into my my cell phone. Not that I would have wanted them all anyway, but I didn't have to sort through that. And I do remember that Bluetooth on my Mac was phenomenally easy versus, you know, the hole I wanted to put in my head after trying to do it in Windows. I'm not sure that Linux would be any better. Harlem, do you use a Bluetooth phone or any Bluetooth devices that you're trying to use with Ubuntu?
No, but that is just recently becoming bigger and bigger. I think it's getting a little bit easier as the releases come along. I'm not really entirely sure, but, you know, if it's anything like the wireless card thing, then I would say that Ubuntu is probably not, you know, up to par with OS X. So, but I don't have enough experience with it to begin with, so I couldn't really say.
Next, This sort of reminds me of number six with the dictionary. But the next thing that this gentleman missed was system-wide spell checking. Basically saying that OS X has system-wide spell check for all Cocoa-based apps. So ties into, again, system-wide dictionaries. With Linux, I know you've got stuff that points into Aspell if you want to. But again, it's another example where stuff is really fragmented and there's no unified standard.
You know, this is one of those things where if you have it, you use it, and you become used to it, and you don't really sit there feeling warm and fuzzy and picking up flowers because of it all the time. But when you don't have it, you really miss it. Yeah, this would be something that I would miss. I could see that. And it's just one little example of, you know, for better or worse, I'm not trying to take a point of view here, but the OS X operating system does have a ton of these features. They're built in, they're integrated, they're kind of, you know, back and forth between everything that I guess is what adds up to why a lot of people enjoy using OS X. And I guess that would be the type of thing that you want to see in whatever operating system you're using. It's just little things like that that add up to, okay, it makes it easy for me to do my job, and it's all built in.
Yeah, he does bring up a good point. The integration... And to a certain extent, even in Windows, the integration is well ahead of what Linux or what Ubuntu is offering at this point. You know, I really like the idea of one spell checking system, one dictionary to cover the whole gamut of applications or packages under Linux. Unfortunately, like you brought up a good point, Peter, the community is somewhat fragmented. There's not a whole lot of quote-unquote focus towards a particular goal or particular type of integration. And so I think that's what some of the developers could learn from closed source software developers such as Apple or Windows.
All right. And then rounding things out, the last thing that he misses is the smart trackpad. You know, I know that the Apple trackpad support has always been my favorite. And it's not just a matter of the hardware, it's also software, because I did recently install Debian 4 on my PowerBook G4. I've got this 4-year-old PowerBook, and it's starting to really show its age when you're running OS X on it, so I said, well, let me just throw Ubuntu on it. Well, problem, there's no more Ubuntu for PowerPC, so I wanted to get the next best thing, and I grabbed Debian. And I put it on there, and it worked, but the support just, you know, alone on this unit, specifically for the trackpad, is really bad. And even though I crank the acceleration and I crank the sensitivity all the way to the top, it literally takes me like 4 or 5 complete scans across the trackpad to get the cursor to go all the way across the screen. So it's like I'm dragging, you know, trying to get from one side to the other. But as for the hardware and the software support, I do know that they have the some really cool features like two-finger scrolling and right-click emulation and the drag and drop stuff, which I really do like. Scott, what do you think? I don't know if you don't use like Ubuntu as a separate standalone machine, but compare like OS X's trackpad sensitivity and the way they have things set up. Do you find that something that you miss when you use other operating systems?
Yeah, I definitely do. The MacBook Pro that I'm using here, it was my first Apple laptop. I really do like the way that the trackpad works on them. You know, the two-finger thing for scrolling and for, you know, being able to right-click and stuff. And just, you can really configure it how you want it, and the sensitivity settings and stuff. It's second to none that I've used as far as laptops go. Now at work I use an IBM, well, Lenovo, but mine still says IBM ThinkPad, and I hate it. I really despise it. I wish I could toss it out a window. It's got the little red thing that you can use for navigating, which is actually not bad. The problem for me personally is, I've got tendonitis, and that thing just makes me want to put my fist into a wall by the end of the day. It hurts so bad. So that's a knee-specific problem. Otherwise, I think that would be pretty good. But the touchpad that they have is horrible. And with me messing with it in Windows, the only way I can configure it is so it's very dangerous. It's easy to select things that you didn't mean to. When you're on the company network and you're dragging one folder into another accidentally, it's probably not a good thing. You know, stuff like that. So I've never been comfortable with their touchpad. And then I can't remember what they call the little red thing. Is it a track point thing or something? But
pointing stick.
Pointing stick. I think that would be okay if it wasn't for the fact that it really kills my tendonitis for whatever reason. Ergonomically, it's horrible for me personally. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the MacBook Pro has been awesome in that respect compared to any other laptop that I've used, and it would be Windows would be the only ones I've used.
Harlem, any thoughts on trackpad support?
No, not really. I think overall my experience with it hasn't been that bad, actually. It's run quite nicely on my old Compaq. I really have no complaints about it. I guess the issue would be usability and ergonomics, so I have nothing to say about those things or compare it to, so.
Well, that pretty much wraps up the 10 points on the Starry Hope blog. But I know, and we touched on a couple of other things, a couple of the things that Scott, you and I had gone back and forth in Twitter and blog posts about. Do you want to go on more about that, about, some of the specific OS X or Apple versus Linux community issues or anything like those?
I think the Linux community has come a long way, and I think that the operating system in its various distributions has come a long way. Neat to see a lot of the great work that's being done. Anything that they can do to make it usable by people who, would be like my parents, for example, so that they have an alternative to Windows that they can actually use whatever apps they need and do things without having to really become knowledgeable about the underlying operating system is great. I kind of get the impression, and I could be wrong, but I get the impression that there's still people in the Linux community that forget that, and they still want you to, maybe there's a little bit of looking down at you if you're not that kind of expert and you need to use the system. I think that's lessening. That's really going away, which is good because, I remember years ago, because I had to use a Windows machine at work, and I was also using Windows machines at home, I would get in discussions with some of the Linux guys at work, and they just would berate me, and I thought, well, I got to be honest with you. For my parents, if it was a choice between Linux at the time or Windows, they're never going to use Linux, and that's just how it is. So, I think that I hope that in the Linux community they can understand and appreciate that things do have to change in order for it to become adopted on a mass scale. I hope everybody can accept that, and that's seen as a kind of necessary thing and can be a good thing.
Yeah, we've touched on this before, too, and I think that Ubuntu, specifically with its philosophy, is going a long way to address this. It is Linux for human beings, not just Linux for hardcore computer geeks. So I think Ubuntu probably has one of the best shots at changing the accessibility of Linux to, average ordinary mortals. So, yeah. But I think it was kind of funny because you and I also talked about a little bit about the smug attitude, and it's kind of illustrated a little bit with people's and their impressions of the "Hello, I'm a PC, I'm a Mac" ad, where the Mac guy comes across as being a little bit smug and. Somebody you want to punch, yeah, kind of. And, while the Unix guys, the Linux guys now are kind of like that, Harlem chats to me and says, I like the guy. Yeah, he's okay. Personally, I like the PC guy. I think he's kind of cool. Yeah. But anyway, I don't think he's kind of cool, but he's likable. Anyway, the Linux guys, I know a good number of, those hardcore Linux, just learn bash, bash scripting and never look back kind of guys. And, they're the same ones who will say, for instance, like, you don't need any, there's no need for Quicken or Microsoft Office or Photoshop or any of those Windows-only programs on Linux. There's no need. You can find open source to do all the same stuff. And I'll say, yeah, mostly, but, it's not exactly the same. It's not 100% compatible, or, sometimes there is a killer app, for instance, Quicksilver, that doesn't yet exist for Linux. And in those cases, I think the ideal solution would be to have said killer app. But, don't lie in the meantime and say that the functionality exists if it doesn't. I think it's also kind of funny, though, because, 10 years ago or so, I know that Mac users, it was very common. It's not so common these days, I guess, because maybe Mac is more mainstream. But Mac users were always so sure of themselves that, they had the best operating system, and they knew that Mac was superior to Windows. And I would ask them, oh, really? Okay, so, you know, like, well, what are some of the things it does different than Windows? And the response would almost always be, well, I don't know. I don't use Windows. I just know that the Mac is better. I would say, okay, yeah, or, you know, blind faith, that's great. I think that's gone away. You know, I do see some of that from Linux guys these days, too. So that's where I'm going with that.
I was just going to say that I think that that kind of attitude in any camp, and that's the problem, too, is people, we're human beings, and we like to compartmentalize, and we like to draw lines in the sand. But you do see that in the Mac community also. I remember reading a post from a switcher who said, you know, I really find it irritating that the only way to resize Windows in OS X is down on the lower right-hand side. And I agree, it's stupid. Why can't I resize my window anywhere I want to? Sometimes the way the windows are positioned makes it a pain to go find that lower right-hand corner. But the response, basically, that he was getting back was, why are you questioning it? That's the way it's always been done. Who needs to be able to resize windows from the other side? Blah, blah, blah. And I thought, well, how stupid is that? You know, you don't have to make the look of the window any different whatsoever. We're not talking about making anything ugly or ruining other functionality. We're just talking about let my cursor be able to drag that other side of the window or any side of the window. It's probably one line of code to change. You know, that's just an example of something where to argue against that is to just say, well, it's never been that way. We're not going to do it that way. And that's the kind of attitude that's non-productive and stupid, no matter what group you belong to.
Yeah, well said. I think you're absolutely right.
Great. I think that pretty much sums it up. I don't really have anything else. Gents, anything else you want to add before we wrap this up?
This has been a really great podcast. Thank you very much, Scott, for joining us. I believe that this is going to be an even bigger topic for 2008. I think we've beaten to death the comparison between Windows operating systems and Linux operating systems. And it's about time, I think, at least this podcast has done one comparing Mac operating systems and Ubuntu Linux. So thank you very much for joining us. Thanks, Peter, for getting this again put together. All right, we are at the time where we just give you our parting words for the day, and this is generally the ending of our podcast. So, Peter, do you have any parting words?
I just want everybody to remember that regardless of which operating system you do choose, Ubuntu is Linux for human beings. And with the advent of GOS, even those who shop at Walmart.
Scott, anything to say to our guests or our listeners?
I just want to say that I think that any Unix-based operating systems are definitely the way to go. I'd like to see the operating system that's older than dirt take over the world and nudge Windows out, but I think anything that you can do to actually learn Unix and the underlying of the system, as well as have an operating system that provides you the ability to not have to deal with it if you don't want to, is just a great thing for everybody all around.
Excellent. Well, there you have it. And thank you very much again, Scott. We have an open invitation for you to come on the podcast anytime you want, and I'm sure we will have you on again in the future. And that is going to do it for this week, and that's a wrap, boys. All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
All right, that is going to do it. I'm going to just keep this short and sweet, as this podcast has probably gone on a little bit longer. Well, I don't know. They're all about the same length nowadays. But anyway, I'm going to keep this short. Thank you for joining us. You can get a hold of us via email, either to me at harlem@freshubuntu.org or petern@freshubuntu.org or, again, at freshubuntu@gmail.com. Music was provided by the Iota Promenet, and we thank you once again for joining us. We will talk to you once again coming up shortly here in probably about a week, so have a nice week all together. And until we meet again, this is Harlem signing off. Goodbye.